Ladies and gentlemen, people of the internet, welcome back to yet another episode of Crypto Over Coffee. I hope you're doing well today. And if you're new here, every Saturday, we break down the latest news and the hottest topics in the world of technology and cryptocurrency over a cup of delicious coffee, which today is a Colombian coffee from Doge Beans. That being said, in today's episode, I'm talking about Cardano's latest upgrades and upcoming upgrades, crypto taxes, our usual 404 Logic Not Found segment, and more. So make sure you stick around for all the updates we've got in store in today's episode. Now, if you like crypto, please do subscribe to the YouTube channel, hit the bell notification button, or follow the podcast on your platform of choice so you get a heads up whenever new episodes of this show hit the interwebs. Just a friendly reminder as well, please be aware of scammers that are across all social media platforms, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, etc., pretending to be me and asking you for money or personal information. I will not reach out to you. I will not ask you for money. And if you get a comment on YouTube that asks you to contact me on WhatsApp, just report it and ignore it. So please be safe out there, folks. Now, as promised in the introduction, I talked about Cardano upgrades. So upgrades that are happening in the near future to help Cardano scale and to help the network grow. So I'm going to share with you the latest upgrades that are making their way to the Cardano network that are going to be critical for the next several months of growth that's likely to occur for the ecosystem. Now, with the launch of the Hallmark Decentralized Exchange, SundaeSwap, and various other dApps landing on Cardano along the way, with already reasonably sized NFT market demand on the network, with NFT drops bringing the network to its knees, the Cardano network has been routinely filled to the brim in terms of transactions. And this high utilization is derivative of supply and demand. There's a finite supply of block space to process transactions and a higher demand than that block space can meet. The key difference for Cardano is that instead of having a fee market for processing transactions like Ethereum does, where you pay more to get faster transaction speed, Cardano is more or less a first-in, first-out type system. You send your transaction and you wait for it to be processed instead of bidding for faster validation through fees. Some like this, some don't, but that's really how it is. This all suffices to say that Cardano is now ready to scale up from its initial configuration that was before smart contracts existed, and that process officially began at the start of the 5-day consensus cycle, or epoch, on Friday, February 4th. This upgrade raised the block capacity on Cardano from 72 kilobytes to 80 kilobytes, and the Plutus smart contract script memory capacity from 12.5 to 14 megabytes, both around 11% increased. More block space and script memory for smart contract execution means more transactions per block and higher scale, and these changes are much needed. However, block size tweaks have diminishing returns and can also have negative consequences on the network if pushed too far in a way that is unbalanced with the rest of the network parameters. So the focus is squarely on broader architectural updates to Cardano as part of the Basho development era to deliver greater scalability and network optimization. Now, as a quick aside, I always love learning about the nomenclature behind Cardano's names and their ties to the blockchain's design. Very clever stuff. So the name Basho in this case comes from the name of a famous 17th century Japanese poet by the same name. Basho's poetry style was characterized by an artful mix of three unrhymed stanzas of 5, 7, and 5 syllables long. And this style is now referred to as haiku. And it's known for its separate but standardized stanzas, all linked in concert with one another to tell a concrete story. Now, let me explain to you the two highlights that are coming in the Basho development era, among other things, and then we can come back to this Basho concept to see the inspiration from the idea of a haiku. Now, I mentioned that pushing block size and script compute parameters higher can have negative consequences, and one of the areas that can be an Achilles heel here is block propagation, or the process of each node in the network receiving and validating new blocks in a process of processes. One big change that's coming at the start of the Basho era is called pipelining, which was outlined in a recent blog post from IOHK. But to make this feature simple and easy to understand, pipelining simply lets the multi-step process involved in block propagation happen with concurrency or with overlap so that these processes can complete much faster. In short, this new and efficient diffusion pipelining process for block propagation gives Cardano much more room to scale and more headroom to accommodate bigger blocks and bigger scripts, so you can raise those limits a little higher. The other major update that's coming is the obvious one, and we've talked about it many times on the show before, so I'm not going to belabor this point, but that is the Layer 2 state channel solution, Hydra. Hydra is a protocol that allows for the dynamic creation of Hydra heads, which are isomorphic state channels, or mini networks that share the fundamental properties of the main Cardano chain that run in parallel with that network for a set of participants. So when you transact within a Hydra head mini network, you can facilitate rapid, low-cost transactions at scale. And this protocol is intended to provide the ability for Cardano to scale to virtually any degree required for users on the network. It's not about being the fastest network in existence. It's about being scalable enough to handle whatever demand there is for Cardano without sacrificing security. So if you think back to this Basho nomenclature and the idea of a haiku, you can imagine that much like the stanzas in a haiku poem, Cardano's scaling journey is about the synergy between several different but related layers that work together brilliantly. So in 2022, Cardano's efforts are going to be squarely focused on scalability and other improvements to the network to better support the continuously burgeoning development atop Cardano. Before I forget, I want to make sure that you mark your calendars because voting for the first annual 2022 CNFT Awards for Cardano NFTs is opening on February 7th. So I'm going to leave a link in the description with more info for that. Your participation is appreciated. And an announcement is also in order that I will be co-hosting the 2022 CNFT Awards show. So I'm very excited to present the best CNFTs by category voted by you, the community. So stay tuned. Hope to see you there. Now, a brief word from our channel sponsor, iTrust Capital, is in order. They offer U.S. crypto investors the opportunity to trade crypto in a tax-advantaged account, or IRA, with either pre-tax or after-tax funds. You simply open an account, fund it with USD, and you can then allocate your portfolio into various cryptocurrencies, including Cardano ADA, Bitcoin, Ether, DeFi coins, etc. Trading within the context of an individual retirement account or IRA means that your trades do not incur capital gains, taxable events as you trade. So your trading strategy can be far different and more aggressive than it would be outside of this tax-advantaged account, where you'd be worried about each transaction's tax implications. So if you sign up for iTrust Capital using my link in the description box, you can earn $100 in Bitcoin through a funded account. So make sure you check out iTrust Capital. Thanks very much. Now for our crypto market update this week, I feel like this is the first time in a good long while that I've been able to report positive price action in any meaningful and sustained way, especially going into a weekend, because weekends generally are terrible for crypto prices, but here we are. The end of the week this week saw crypto markets flush with buying, pushing Bitcoin back above the 40K mark, where it sits right now in around the $41,000, $42,000 range. Ether is also narrowly back above $3,000. And most of the markets are up on the day and on the week, and this is likely for a variety of reasons. First, you have fears around global conflict and talk about rate hikes subsiding for now. And keyword is for now. But you also saw a resurgence in heavily sold off tech stocks, which also helps. These markets are correlated. And lots of the TA folks or technical analysis folks say that Bitcoin breaking that 41,000 level is a good sign, but I'm not really into that type of analysis personally. It's just not accurate enough. Just like the equities markets, if the fears of war, regulation, or rate hikes come back to the forefront, the markets will react in crypto and traditional markets in a negative way. So now is a time for cautious optimism, but cautious is the operative word. You have to be careful as you navigate the market right now and don't get sucked into confirmation bias in either direction that we're going to all-time highs or we're dumping to lower prices. Neither are guaranteed. Now, if we return to the topic of crypto taxes for a second, the beginning of 2022 has brought some rare good news for crypto taxes and the situation in the United States. There are two areas that I want to highlight. First, a bill was introduced recently by US lawmakers that would make crypto transactions of $200, give or take, for personal transactions exempt from resulting capital gains tax from the disposal of cryptocurrency. This would be pretty interesting to see happen because it would eliminate one of the last remaining barriers for people to use crypto on a daily basis. No one wants to think about the tax implications of buying a Chipotle burrito, right? I mean, that's what stops me from using crypto day to day for the most part. I'm not sure of how likely it is that this passes, but it's good to see this idea being shopped around in one form or another and not ridiculed largely like it used to be. That said, the more interesting news here is reports of a legal precedent that resulted from a lawsuit brought by a Tennessee couple to the IRS related to the tax treatment of staking rewards. In this case, the couple argued that the taxation of staking rewards as income is unlawful, as those rewards from staking operations are classified as quote-unquote taxpayer-created property. This is a paraphrase, rather than income. The argument further clarified that in this case, taxation should only occur upon disposal of that cryptocurrency to USD, where capital gains would be assessed. In this case of unclaimed staking rewards, the couple was victorious in the sense that the IRS agreed to refund them for the taxes paid in relation to their Tezos staking rewards. The implication of this is that there could be a pathway to a national legal precedent that staking rewards are in fact not income, but rather property resultant from creative activity that should be taxed on disposal for profit only. And this has got a ways to go before this is very clear or set in stone, but this single legal precedent is pretty significant in the classification and tax treatment of staking rewards throughout the country and how it's going to be thought about in the future. In other news, after weeks and months of speculation, GameStop's foray into crypto and NFTs has truly begun with an announcement of a partnership with blockchain gaming powerhouse and layer 2 project Immutable X. And Immutable X is one that I've covered on the show before in relation to its use in the blockchain game Gods Unchained. But anyway, I digress. The significance of this announcement is that GameStop is in fact building an off-chain, or well, more so layer 2 NFT marketplace using Immutable X's tools, and this is not really a surprise per se, but the $100 million grants program for builders and creators on the platform will certainly be well received for those looking to build on the upcoming GameStop NFT ecosystem that's reportedly going to be carbon neutral and free from gas fees. So that'll eliminate a couple of the obvious negative things that will be read about on the media. But as exciting as this news is at face value, some embarrassment ensued after this announcement, as GameStop reportedly dumped millions of dollars worth of IMX tokens from the Immutable X ecosystem that they received as a grant. And I can only assume they received these tokens to build this marketplace and ancillary products. They dumped these on the market, causing a significant dent in the IMX price. That's not a great way to start out a public partnership, but hey, what do I know? I mean, GameStop is learning a hard lesson in the crypto world. If you dump tokens like that, you're going to catch a lot of criticism for it. So this whole thing has been a mixed bag, good and bad, go figure. But what do you think? Will this layer 2 GameStop NFT marketplace be a huge success or a huge flop? I think it remains to be seen. Now it's time for Rational Reactions, a segment on the show where I read headlines from tech and crypto related publications to give you my instant rational reaction based on those headlines. So let's switch over to the computer and we can go ahead and get started with these stories. And then we'll follow up with 404 Logic Not Found. So stick around. All right. The first story of the day here is from Cointelegraph. All the world's Bitcoin can only pay 2.43% of the $30 trillion US national debt. The latest grim milestone for the US economy means that its national debt total is now 4,000% larger than the total Bitcoin market cap. Now, this right here is pretty much the case for Bitcoin. If you think about the case for Bitcoin, this is a store of value, which is not perfect. A store of value, though, that is not tied to any single person, government, organization, group, etc. This is a sovereign store of value. It's the first real instance of what I would deem to be digital gold. And it's maybe even a better gold because you can mathematically verify and prove the total supply and relative scarcity of that asset. And so when you look at the US national debt, which is completely out of control, and this is not just in the US, but a lot of countries around the world have these issues around inflation, debt, issues with the economy unrelated to these two things. The thing is that people don't have full control over this. And that's the appeal for Bitcoin. It's not an anarchic thing. But it's a hedge. It's a way for people to get access to an asset that is not tied to a single government or not tied or issued by a single government, not controlled by somebody else. And I think that that is the most peaceful way that someone can express concern and trepidation over the economic situation in their local country. And this is the same for really, really economically powerful countries like the United States and countries that are really struggling in third world countries, in places where the economies are just can't even stand up to a lot of these really well-developed countries, so in underdeveloped areas. So it's a really, it's a kind of a great equalizer in a sense. The biggest thing is that the debt situation, whether it's 30 trillion, it's 20 trillion, it's 10 trillion, whatever it is, it's out of control and it needs to be fixed. It's quite literally that simple. But this type of thing, the US national debt is a great example of why people like Bitcoin. All right. The next story is again from Cointelegraph. Gas free transactions will revolutionize Web3. The next wave of DeFi will see users utilizing L2 chains, layer 2 chains, interacting freely or at near zero cost with newer DeFi applications. Now, I've talked about this before on the show, but I have an issue with the zero fee idea. In my opinion, there's a reason why on layer 1 chains like Ethereum, there are fees. On Cardano, there's fees. On any blockchain, there's fees. Even if they're small, there are fees. Why? Because when you have fees, you are, first of all, supporting the network security with economic lever, but you also have a lever to protect against denial of service or spam attacks. Because when there's a cost, there's a disincentive for a bad actor to just publish a ton of transactions using bots and just flood the network with nonsense and garbage. This is an attack vector that you need to protect against on L2s and L1s. So when you have no fees, there's got to be some other way to prevent these types of spam attacks. And there are a bunch of creative opportunities and creative ways to do that, but fees are probably the best one. And there has to be some degree of fees. Here's the thing. When it comes to NFTs, people don't like this, but in some ways, fees infuse a base level amount of value into that NFT because there's a cost associated with creating it. I think fees are good. Extremely exorbitant fees that price people out of the market are bad. But if you look at something like Phantom, low fees, great network. I think fees are necessary, and I don't think calling for fee-free transactions is a smart move. Just my opinion. Feel free to disagree. I'm just really excited for Q&A, clearly. The next article is from The Atlantic. The crypto backlash is booming. Web3 is making people very rich, some people very rich. It's making other people very angry. Okay, so if you read the mainstream media articles or you watch TV, you hear about the two extremes. You hear about if you invested $1,000 in Shiba Inu on this day, you would be this rich now. Or the story about how someone made millions of dollars on NFTs, or how someone made millions of dollars on this DeFi coin. Or you see articles about how someone's life was ruined by a crypto scam, or how they got rug pulled, or how NFTs are a calamity for the environment, or how blockchains and crypto is only for criminals. You get those two extremes, and that's about it. Nothing in between. The reality is that it's in between. Here's my problem with this. A lot of people are angry because they are being fed the narrative that they should be angry about this. And they're being fed information that doesn't give them the whole story. We're coming from a perspective of a lack of understanding. And this is, quite frankly, kind of normal. This is normal. There was a lot of resistance to every new thing in history that really changes the paradigm of way people operate around a certain thing. People are maybe threatened in a, not necessarily an intellectual way, but they feel a little bit disconcerted by all this stuff that's going on that's hard to understand. So I think it's up to us in the crypto space to help push out just as loud as the mainstream media is pushing out sort of negativity around crypto, to push out fact-based, respectful information about what's going on for real. So for example, with NFTs, when Ethereum shifts from proof of work to proof of stake, the argument for NFTs being bad for the environment dissolves, completely dissolves. But you know what? It will continue because that's what's been portrayed to a lot of people. And they will not go and research, oh, Ethereum moved to proof of stake. Oh, it's no issue anymore. It will still be an issue because people will think it's still an issue, even when it's not. So I think it's really important for us to combat this not with anger and fighting and negativity, but to just put out there the facts. And I think over time, you keep moving forward, you keep building, people will start to understand this better and the anger will dissolve. Articles like this, not gonna talk about too much in specific and not gonna attack in any way this article, just this is bringing up a point. So interesting stuff for sure. Okay, last one for the day is from CoinDesk. JP Morgan Asset Management Chief slams Bitcoin in Maltese Falcoin report. Michael Sembalest, I hope that's right, looks into Bitcoin, DeFi, NFTs, and more, and doesn't like what he finds. Okay, JP Morgan, across the board, in many ways, has been bashing crypto and Bitcoin since the very beginning. Jamie Dimon has always been attacking crypto. They've also really been building in the blockchain and crypto space, so I'm very confused as to why there's that dissonance, but that's neither here nor there. This type of thing, a JP Morgan asset management chief bashing crypto holistically, is the least surprising thing that I think I've read this entire week. It's like someone who sold horses in the 1800s and made a ton of money doing it, saying cars are garbage and they'll never work and they're too expensive. They're not, you can't find fuel, you can't go very far, so cars are dead, they're not going to work. I mean, obviously, there are issues with crypto, without a doubt. There are a lot of issues with the traditional systems, without a doubt. I think we have a pretty clear understanding that Bitcoin and crypto is here to stay. It's going to be a matter of how that manifests itself, but attacking it like this really is not going to make much of a difference. So feel free to keep attacking it, JP Morgan. Okay, with that, let's do some 404 logic not found. That being said, it is time for 404 Logic Not Found, a weekly segment where I highlight notable tech-related fails or otherwise stupid moves in the world that need to get some attention. And if you like this segment, it's a fan favorite, please hit like, get subscribed, follow the podcast. It really does help the show. Now, I've taken some time in formulating my stance on this topic of today, but I'm going to come right out and say it. I think that Meta, formerly Facebook, will fail dramatically at garnering adoption from their metaverse product pivot. And the reason why I feel that way hinges on the somewhat illogical reasoning behind the move to reorient their entire business to building the virtual world in their image and assuming people will trust them to do so. Now, I feel I'm not alone in this, but I personally think that Facebook, now Meta, is the last company that I would trust to build a world where I or my data resides. There have been, frankly, too many missteps in user privacy and profiteering off of said data for me in the past to willingly hand over even a morsel of my consciousness and any of my data to any metaverse that Meta creates. I mean, let's just take a brief foray into recent events for Meta, which estimates, for example, that Apple alone could cost them $10 billion in 2022. Why? Well, because the people are starting to demand privacy, and while not perfect, companies are obliging, including Apple, that has billions of phones in people's hands that now let one tell apps not to track. And it may not be billions, millions, whatever it is. But this ask the app not to track feature has caused quite a lot of pain and operating losses for Meta. Without being able to track our every move and monetize our data, Meta's revenue machine seems to be slowing. So what's the obvious way to get you and I to willingly give Meta the data it so craves and makes money on? Well, getting us to sign up for a virtual world that they control, probably with their own hardware that works around any manufacturer restrictions, would be a pretty good way to get that, wouldn't it? No thank you. However, it's not a rainbow road to get there for Meta. It's not an easy path, because the operating losses as they build the business are mounting, and it could take years to build towards their ultimate goal. What's interesting, though, is that the last lofty goal adjacent to Meta's full-tilt dive into the metaverse was a dramatic failure. More specifically, this was the effort for the Diem cryptocurrency, a stablecoin project that originally began under the moniker of Libra. The project was laid its final blow recently as the project was offloaded by Meta, selling its assets to a crypto bank partner, Silvergate, but only after intense scrutiny from Congress, regulators, and the general public around just distrust in Facebook, distrust in Meta, and it made the likelihood of this project seeing the light of day minimal, if you ask me. Given this distrust, the trend towards users demanding privacy and ownership of their data and assets, and Meta's long road to realizing their vision around the metaverse, I cannot see this working well for the company. Meta is simply building towards a future that benefits them. And if that future is incongruent with the demands of the user, then why do it? If Meta's version of the metaverse is simply a more immersive second act to the same data-selling, privacy-invading, overbearing technology that has run rampant over the last several years, then all it is a 404 logic not found. So please share your thoughts about this as well. I would also like to thank Syscoin, who is the show sponsor today. And I'd like to more specifically share more information about their core technology going into the rest of 2022. Now, Syscoin's been around since 2014, give or take, and its tech strategy has evolved pretty dramatically in recent times, including the implementation of Bitcoin merge mining to derive security from proof of work, and the new network-enhanced virtual machine, or NEVM, that delivers full Ethereum virtual machine compatibility for smart contracts atop a UTXO, or unspent transaction output, blockchain, just to name a few things. It's quite a unique structure, actually. However, one of the biggest areas of research for Syscoin right now is in the zero-knowledge technology space, more specifically, ZK rollups for scaling, same type of technology that's going to be in the Ethereum space. ZK rollups, in a very highly simplified manner, rolls up bundles of transactions on an L2 or a layer 2 and consummates that bundle on the main network, relying on storage outside of the blockchain to do this. So this off-chain storage of data can become an attack vector, which Syscoin has proposed a solution for in a proof of data availability protocol, or PODA. This PODA protocol offers a more efficient way to validate ZK rollups by reducing the overhead required for presenting this off-chain data, only requiring one honest entity to store and furnish the data in archive. This separation of archival and data replication greatly reduces the cost and overhead involved in low TPS rollups in particular. So if you want to read more about Syscoin's technology and proof of data availability protocol, check out the article I linked in the description below, which gives a ton of information about this. Remember, this, nor any episode of my show, is a call to action to buy tokens of any kind. It's squarely focused on education, so thank you for that. Okay, let's do some community Q&A. And I always answer questions from folks who watch the show every week, week in, week out. And I've got some questions from last week's show that I'm going to answer. And I want to remind you that if you have a question that you want answered, leave them in the comments below on YouTube, or you can tweet me at Hishoshi4 as well. All right, let's dive into these questions and see what we've got on deck today. So what we've got question-wise, I think we have three questions today, if I remember correctly. I'm trying to, per your feedback, get this up, these shows as close to 30 minutes as I can. So first question, KWY0220, can you do a quick guide on how NFT domain names work and how you would host a decentralized website using one of these domains? Yes. So an NFT domain name works just like traditional DNS or domain name systems, right? In general, what you have is an index or a list which maps a human readable name like youtube.com to an IP address, which is basically computer speak for where certain resources for a website live. Blockchain-based domains work the same way, but instead of having centralized registrars that can take away your domain and remove your content and censor you, you instead have content hosted on a resilient, fault-tolerant, decentralized file storage platform like IPFS or Interplanetary File System, and a domain name that resolves on the blockchain, meaning you have unrevocable or irrevocable domain names on the blockchain network that are controlled by you via your private key. So from my own personal crypto or my own personal website using decentralized tech, I have the content, web content living on IPFS, which gives me a hash value, which is like the mapping to where that content is. And so what I do is I take my on-chain hashoshi.crypto domain and I mapped that to that IPFS hash. So when my browser goes to resolve that domain, it sends basically the human readable hashoshi.crypto domain, queries the blockchain for the IPFS hash, which then indexes where the content is. The content is then displayed on the browser and you have a resolved website. So that's very simplified, leaving out some of the technical details, but that's generally how it works. Thank you for your question. The next one is from Munesh Sharma. Any idea when Ethereum 2.0 will fully launch? So fully launch is gonna be years and years from now. Fully launch means every feature is in there. We're talking ZK rollups, potentially all of the sharding capabilities that they're looking at, WebAssembly for smart contracts, all these sorts of different things that have been talked about over the years, and they'll probably change and shift, and some things will be gone, some things will come in that are not thought of yet. Vitalik Buterin talked about sort of a six-year timeline to get to Ethereum 2.0 complete, and they're no longer calling it Ethereum 2.0. It's just Ethereum. You have the execution layer and the consensus layer, which is going to be representative of the merge between that Beacon chain with proof of stake and the Ethereum network we're using today for smart contracts. Those are going to merge probably in June, July of 2022. So that's the beginning. but we're not going to have like feature complete for a long while. But we will see some improvement long before then. Thank you for your question. Quick coffee break. Last question is from Carlos Borns. In your opinion, what's the best strategy to gain interest on stablecoins? Something that's bear market proof. I don't want to put my money in a lending protocol that can go down during a long bear market. So you're generally going to see that stablecoin earning is never going to be risk-free, no matter what you do. Lower risk, in my opinion, would be platforms like Ledin or Celsius, because they have the ability to actively risk manage with those that they lend these stable coins to. So you can earn a more consistent reward rate there and insulate yourself from the on-chain issues that there might be in some of these lending protocols that are smart contract driven in DeFi. So you're looking at two options: slightly higher yields, but higher risk on a DeFi platform on different blockchain networks, or potentially lower yield, but lower risk and more predictability and liquidity to get out if you need to on these centralized platforms like Ledin or Celsius. So I'll leave links to Ledin and Celsius in the description below. In terms of on-chain ones, DeFi related ones, it's gonna depend on what blockchain that you are using most often. So please let me know in the comments and I can give you a follow-up on which protocols lending-wise that I might recommend for stablecoin lending during a bear market. So thank you very much for your question, Carlos, and everyone else who asked questions. If you have questions for the next show, leave them in the comments below. Most of all, thank you so much for watching this episode. It's a little delayed today because of unforeseen construction on my building, which is very annoying. But that being said, thank you so much again. Hope you and your family have a wonderful week and weekend ahead. And until next time, cheers.